The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Maya, by me, Proktam, spoken, he, in fact, Lokasya, for the people, Pramanam, authority, Satya, spoken in scripture, Lahokike, and in ordinary speech, Ata, therefore, Ajani, there was birth, Maya, by me, Tubyam, unto you, Ya, that which Avocham I said, Ritam true, Mune, O sage. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The Personality of Godhead Kapila said, whatever I speak, whether directly or in the scriptures, is authoritative in all respects for the people of the world. O Muni, because I told you before that I would become your son, I have descended to fulfill this truth. Purport. Part of Amuni was to leave his family life to completely engage in the service of the Lord. But since he knew that the Lord himself, as Kapila, had taken birth in his home as his own son, why was he preparing to leave home? To search out self-realization or God-realization? Such a question may certainly arise. What's the answer? Any guess before I read it? Why would you leave home? Krishna himself has taken birth as his son. Any guess? Okay, I'll read it. Such a question may certainly arise. But here it is said that whatever is spoken in the Vedas and whatever is practiced in accordance with the injunctions of the Vedas is to be accepted as authoritative in society. Vedic authority says that a householder must leave home after his 50th year. Panchashur Dvam Vanam Rajit. One must leave his family life and enter the forest after the age of 50. This is an authoritative statement of the Vedas based on the division of social life into four divisions of activity: Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. Gautama Muni practiced yoga very rigidly as a Brahmachari before his marriage. And he became so powerful and attained so much mystic power that his father, Brahma, ordered him to marry and beget children as a household. Kartika did that also. He begot 9 good daughters and 1 son, Kapila Muni. And thus his householder duty was also performed nicely. And now his duty was to leave. Even though he had the supreme personality of Godhead as his son, he had to respect the authority of the Vedas. This is a very important lesson. Even if one has God in his home as his son, one should still follow the Vedic injunctions. It is said, Mahajano yena gata sapanta. One should traverse the path which is followed by great personalities. Okay, I have a purport you made, but let me say something. So the answer that Prabhupada gives in the purport, why the devotee in Vatsalya Rasa, Kapila Muni, who has undergone so much austerity, he said to Vishnu, I want a wife. But that was not all he wanted. He wasn't just, you know, agitated brahmachari who felt he needed to get married and that would be the solution of his problems. Most brahmacharis who have gotten married found out that it wasn't the solution to all their problems. That, you know, maybe it solved something, but it created other problems. It wasn't that Kartikamuni who was thinking like that. You know, I can't continue with this brahmacharya, I gotta get married. No, he was a very successful brahmachari. He could have remained brahmachari for another 10,000 years, no problem. But he had another desire that he could not get rid of. To have the personality of Godhead as his son. This doesn't happen accidentally to just anybody. The devotee who becomes the parent of the Lord must have had that intense desire and must have worshipped the Lord in the Vatsalya Rasa for a long time. And the fruit of that worship and meditation is that he gets the Lord as his child. It doesn't just happen. So Kartika Muni's actual sankalpa, his actual desire, was to get Kapila Muni as his son. All this trouble was for that. He had to even debase himself in the presence of the Supreme Lord himself and apologize. I'm a materialist. I want a wife. Please give me. He went through all that just to get Kapila Devi as his son. And now, Kapila Devi is reaching his maturity and Kartika feels it's his duty to take sannyasa and leave home and not get the association of that son anymore. This is unusual. The explanation is injunction of the Vedas. The Vedas order one must leave home at the age of 15. How old was Nanda Maharaj when Krishna was born? Nanda Maharaj. He was like in his late 60s, wasn't he? Older than that. Anyway, so there are exceptions. Nanda Maharaj did not choose to take sannyas and miss out on Krishna's Balya Lila. There are exceptions. Vasudeva obeyed Krishna's order. Infant Krishna, newborn Krishna, ordered him through his heart to take him away to Gokula. Nanda deposited his son secretly in the bed of Rohini. I'm sorry, Yashoda. And so Krishna grew up. And as he grew up, Vasudeva and Devaki did not get to enjoy their association and see their childhood pastimes and have that loving reciprocation the way Nanda and Yashoda did. But that wasn't Vasudeva's choice. Krishna ordered him. It was his misfortune that he missed out on Krishna's pastimes. But here, Kardama Muni is voluntarily, of his own volition, leaving home. It's just the works of Krishna's Leela. The ultimate Vedic injunction is what Krishna wants. Arjuna, in the beginning of the discussion of the Bhagavad Gita, had so many Vedic arguments, or at least arguments based on the Dharma Shastra, Artha Shastra, Vedic literature, why he shouldn't fight the battle. It's improper, it's against all the principles, Kula Dharma, Jati Dharma, Manushya Dharma, to kill your guru. So Arjuna, he declined to fight on that basis, on the basis of Shastric injunction. He didn't directly quote the Rig Veda, but he practically quoted right out of the Dharma Shastras. Reasons why not to do that fight, not to engage in that fight. But Krishna disagreed. Forget your Vedic injunctions. Sarva dharmam paritya dhyamanikam sharanam bhaji. You just do what I want. That's the highest Vedic injunction. So in Arjuna's case, he had to go directly against the Vedic authority and accept the higher authority of what Krishna wanted for him in that situation. Ultimately, or even in general, for the devotees who are directly participating in Krishna's pastimes, for his associates, it is what Krishna wants, that's the law. You don't, well, maybe in Vaikuntha, maybe for some of the devotees in Dwarka, they're just serving the Lord out of obedience to the Vedic injunctions, strictly rules and regulations, devotion. But for Krishna's intimate devotees, for the devotees of Vraja, the motivation is simply their love for Krishna. For some of them, it's on the basis of their relationship with Krishna. Krishna's parents feel the urge to protect Krishna. They consider Krishna their helpless son, their dependent. They must protect him. They must raise him properly and have him educated. Of course, the education for the gwalas is simply to learn how to take care of the cows. But that was Krishna's education. Send him out to the forest, 3 years old. You see these boys here, boys and girls, 3, 4 years old, herding buffaloes, 10 times bigger than them, with a little stick. So Krishna, his education began at the age of 3, sent out with Balaram and the other boys to practice herding the young calves. That was his education. His parents were concerned to protect him, to raise him, to teach him what he needed to learn. They didn't think he's independent, all-supreme personality of Godhead. This is the Vatsalya Rasa. In that attitude, one is motivated by the relationship. The attitude of Krishna is my son. But there's another spontaneous mode of love, which is kamamani. It's based simply on desire. Not your selfish desire, but Krishna's desire. The real meaning of kamamani, Raghunoga Bhakti, practice of serving Krishna in spontaneous love based on desire, it's based on Krishna's desire. The gopis of Vrindavan simply want that Krishna be happy. And they'll do anything for that. And they violate. They go against all their relationships. They take the risk of being rejected by their families. Jai Shri Krishna Balaram, Shri Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai, Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. Their Kula Dharma, Jati Dharma, and their decency as girls from respectable families, their relationships with their families, their elders, are all being threatened by their association with Krishna. and they are ready to let it all go to hell and become rejected and become irreligious for Krishna's pleasure. Either way, either based on relationship or based out of sheer desire for Krishna's happiness, the intimate devotees go beyond the Shastra. If the Shastra contradicts Krishna's desire, then forget the Shastra. But we see Kartika Muni is not that kind of devotee. We shouldn't think, well, he's just something inferior. We're not interested in his devotion. Krishna's interested in it. Krishna is not wanting only to have a universe full of gopis and nothing else. Krishna wants variety. If you just feed him the same rasa over and over again, he gets bored. Krishna is, as Srila Rupa Goswami indicates in his very first Mangalacharana verse of Bhaktira Samyukta Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, Bhaktira Samyukta Murtini, Krishna is the embodiment of all varieties of loving relationships. Krishna wants that variety. He wants to have a devotee like Kardama, who is concerned about following the Vedic injunctions about taking sannyas at the right time. Whether your son is God or not, you've got to leave home. So to have a devotee who cares about that gives a special kind of pleasure to Krishna in his form as Kapila Muni. This is rasa. This is a basis of enjoyment. Krishna wants that he has a Kapila Muni and that he has another Maharaj. He wants both. So, therefore, for us to study the Leela of Lord Kapila and his instructions is very important. Shukadeva Goswami thought it was important enough to incorporate Maitreya and Vidura's discussion at length of the pastimes and the teachings of Lord Kapila. There are other, Kapila Deva is not normally considered one of the major avatars. He's never listed as one of the 10 avatars or even one of the, well, he's in the list of 27 avatars. In the second chapter of the first canto, Sutta Goswami does include him. Panchama, number 5 in the list. Not number 5 chronologically necessarily, but number 5 in the list. Given by Sutta Goswami. Panchama Kapilo Nama Siddhesha Kalavit Plutam Povach Asurehe Samkyam Tatka Rama Vinyunayam. The 5th avatar in the list is Kapila, great Siddhesha, Lord among them, or a great master among those who are perfect in yoga, who have perfected their lives spiritually. And he retaught the ancient science of Sankhya analysis that had been lost in time, Kalavit Plutam. And it says, Sutta says, that he spoke it to Asuri Brahmana, a Brahmana named Asuri, Asuriye, not to Devahuti. This is a different appearance of Kapila, to whom he spoke Sankhya philosophy to someone else than Devahuti. Anyway, he considered it important enough to list. Also in Brahma's brief description of the major avatars in the 7th chapter of the 2nd canto. Jagye Chakardam Agrihe Dvijadeva Utyam Strivik Samamnavadi Atma Gatim Somatri Uche Yayatma Shamalam Guna Sangha Pankam Asmin Vidunya Kapilasya Gatim Pravede. So here it describes the actual same incarnation of Kapila, son of Devahuti and Kardama. So the Lord took birth, Kardama Vidunya, in the home of Kardama Muni. His mother is Devahuti, and he was born along with seven sisters who became the wives of great sages. Uche, and he spoke it to his mother, his own mother. He gave her instruction in that science by which the contamination of the heart, the mud, metaphorical mud, of association, dirt that is accrued by associating with the lower material modes. He gave to his mother such knowledge by which that can all be washed away. That's description by Lord Brahma of Kapila. But he's not, Jayadeva Kavi does not include him in the Dashavatara Stotra. He's not, I mean, within the top 27, not within the top 10 avatars. Middle, we can say middle level avatar, as far as popularity goes. I don't know any temple, Mandir, of Kapila, I've never seen one. There's a Kapila ashrama, well, there's Ganga Sagara. I don't know if there's any worthier temple there. The place where Kapila Muni is still meditating, I think he's still meditating, that is there in Sundarbans, near the delta of the Ganga. Beside that, I don't think we have any mandirs, temples where the devotees of Kapila come to worship him. Not the, one of the most popular avatars. Still, Shukadeva has recited, or he's repeated the discussion of Maitreya and Vidura for several chapters. This started in chapter 21, when Swayambhu was looking for a groom, a husband for his daughter, and he came and visited Kardama. From then on, this pastime has been going on, and is going to go on to the end of this canto. So it's quite a long discussion. There are, I think, a total of 33 avatars who get at least one chapter of description of Srimad Bhagavatam. Others are only mentioned, briefly, sometimes in one verse only. Only by name, and a very brief allusion to what their pastimes were. There are 33 avatars who get at least a whole chapter of description. One chapter. But Kapila is getting how many chapters? 13 chapters. Quite a long section. Lord Ramachandra's pastimes are described in only two chapters. The reason is, Sukadeva told Pariksit, you've already studied this. You've read Mount Valmiki's Ramayana, you're familiar with it, why do I need to repeat it? So he gave a brief synopsis only. But Kapila Muni's Leela is not available. I don't think it's described in any length in any other Purana, only some brief mention. So this is the one source for the understanding or hearing about the Leela of Lord Kapila. His pastime is especially giving instruction. It's unusual that he's giving it to his mother at home. There's a saying that no one's a saint in his own hometown. You may be a great saint and you may be respected all over the world. Your disciples may call you Jagat Guru, but when you go home to visit your mother and father, they don't care. You're just their son, the same old boy. No one's a saint in his own hometown. You don't read about, generally about Mother Shachi. She's the same. She is Yashoda Devi, the reincarnation of Yashoda. She has such an intimate love for Krishna, greatest of all Vatsalya Bhaktas. But you don't hear her asking, Vimai, can you explain to me all the, you know, Navinyaya you're learning and what you're debating with your friends? Can you explain it to me? She doesn't care about it. Once, when she caught her son sitting in the backyard on the dirty, broken clay pots, she accepted some instruction from him about, some brief introduction to Vedanta philosophy. From the Mayavadi point of view, as his Leela, he taught Mayavadi philosophy to his mother. But that was it. It was not her vasa to be, so eager to receive instruction from her son. She wasn't thinking of Nimai, her son, as her teacher. Never thought like that, even though he was the greatest pundit in town. She was a simple Bengali mother. She wasn't looking for a, university education from her son. So this is special, that the Lord, instead of going away to find his preaching field, he's staying home and teaching it to his mother. Very unusual pastime. And the Lord, in his various avatars, sometimes he gives instructions like this. Sometimes he says a few things to a few devotees. Sometimes his pastime involves some preaching, like Krishna's pastimes. Okay, he spoke the Bhagavad Gita, and he spoke even the longer Gita to Uddhava, and he did give instructions to other devotees. But Krishna was not known as a big public speaker. He was not interested in showing off his erudition. He didn't have on his business card all his bodies listed, all his university degrees. Krishna was not into that. He was not a big speaker. He would sit and listen to others, and then add a few words of comment of his own, normally. He wasn't a big talker, Krishna. When it came time for his intimate devotees, then he gave important instructions to Arjuna, to Uddhava, to a few others. He had to apologize to the sages at the end of his pastimes. This is related in Vishnu Chakravarti's commentary to the 10th canto. Because we know from the Bhagavatam that Krishna told Uddhava that, "I'm sorry, you can't come back with me. You have to remain in this world for a few years, even though all my other devotees are going back to their respective abodes. I'm asking you to stay here and be my preaching representative for a few years. And I'm sending you to Badrinath. Because I'm sorry I forgot to visit the sages there. I'm so busy visiting everybody else. Running back and forth from Dwarka to Hastinapur, going off to Mithila and other places. I never went to Badrinath. I never visited my great devotees, Naranarayan. Narada is up there. I never visited them. So please, you go." And in Vishnu Chakravarti's commentary, we get the recording of the letter that Krishna dictated to Uddhava to bring to the sages at Badrinath. "I've been here for 125 years. My pastimes are now up. I have to go back to where I came from. I'm sorry that in all my travels I never got a chance to come and visit you. But I'm sending my best devotee Uddhava to you. And he will enlighten you about the things I taught him. So please, give him a reception." That was Krishna's letter to Naranarayan and the sages at Badrinath. He had Uddhava do the teaching there, in that case. So Krishna, he didn't even, he wasn't so much interested in going all over and preaching to everybody. He wasn't a big public preacher. He preached to a few of his devotees. That wasn't his leela. But Kapila, his major leela, is giving instructions. Normally, giving instructions is just a small part of Krishna's pastimes. Krishna and his various avatars, he's out there killing demons, having loving relationship with his devotees, teaching, speaking philosophy. It's just one of the things he does, not one of the primary things he does. But Krishna loves variety. This is also one of the aspects of the variety of his pastimes, that he's the supreme teacher. And he perfectly embodies this. The great professor of the science of Samkhya, Kapila Muni. This is special pastime of the Lord. Those devotees who might be attracted to such a thing, Their role model is a great teacher, so let them go to Kapila Muni. Better that than they go to Lord Buddha and hear some nonsense. Let them go to Kapila Muni and hear perfect truth. Sankhya philosophy directly from the mouth of the personality of Godhead. Perfectly pure. When we read, starting from the next chapter, the actual instructions of Kapila, they don't read like an ordinary philosophy textbook. They're not dry. They're not convoluted and difficult to follow. From the very beginning of his instructions, everything he says is drowning in the spirit of pure devotion to the Supreme Lord. So the Lord, in his avatar as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Apanish Achari, how's it going? I'm going to teach the jivas by my own behavior. I'm not going to, also, Lord Chaitanya, he didn't write any books. We have the only really authenticated work written by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Shikshastika. A few other things are ascribed to him. But as far as Prabhupada is concerned, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu only wrote the Shikshastika in his own hand. Other things that he spoke may have been recorded by his devotees. Krishnadas Kaviraj records many things that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. And other devotees do also. Kavi Karnapur and others have recorded some of the statements of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But as far as things that he wrote as a composition, 8 verses only. So he wasn't a big author in that sense, writing books. But Kapila Muni, he has given us the textbook on the science of analysis of the elements of nature in order to understand ourselves as pure spirit and the Supreme Lord as the absolute spirit. But from the very beginning of those instructions, the mood of everything is how to focus our attention on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord and develop love for him and understand how to perform his devotional service. That's the whole theme, the underlying current of Lord Kapila Dev's teachings. And we'll find out in the very beginning they're full of nectar. Okay, so I'll stop here. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Okay, yes.
When we chant Hare Krishna mantra, it's very special to remember Krishna, you know, to imagine his form, his face like this. But I heard that it is more auspicious to meditate on his devotees, pure devotees like Arjuna. Can you put some commentary?
While you're chanting Krishna's names, that it is auspicious, you're saying, to meditate on his pastimes, his forms like that?
Yeah.
But that it's more auspicious to meditate on his devotees?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know of a scriptural basis for that. I know Prabhupada's instruction that we should primarily, especially when we're learning how to chant, when we're practicing, we haven't become completely competent, but we haven't focused our attention fully on Krishna's name. We're still struggling with our distracting mind. That we should focus primarily on the sound of the syllables of the mantra and try to hear it rather than try prematurely or artificially as a mental exercise to meditate, you know, and actually focus very intensely on remembering Krishna's form, his pastime, and so on, and his devotees. So, as I understand, Prabhupada's instruction was that focus on the sound. You know, and then when you become attracted to the sound, and you actually are hearing, then this process of remembering will naturally develop. It's not a mental exercise. It's not done with the mind. It awakens in the heart. And the heart has to be brought back to life. We have to cleanse the heart of its contamination of envy, lust, and greed before we can actually even begin proper remembrance. Now, as far as remembrance of his devotees being better than remembrance of Krishna himself, I just don't, you know, sort of sounds okay, but I don't know, I don't remember hearing that anywhere. It seems that they would be equivalent. You know, we should be doing both. We should be practicing both. Maybe not while we're supposed to be focusing on hearing our japa, but maybe other times of the day we can think about, you know, Krishna's devotees and also think about Krishna and his pastimes. Why should we do one and exclude the other? You know, I could say that remembering Krishna's devotees is more important. It sort of sounds okay, but I don't remember ever hearing this. Okay? Hare Krishna. Something else?
Yes, ma'am. It seems like there's an inherent contradiction in the fact that Krishna is advocating Sarvajnananda-Yajna.
Yes.
And the whole point of Kardama Muni following his Varnashram Dharma, even the point of missing out on the Leela Krishna of the Godhead.
Yes.
Both of them are Krishna conscious, there's no denying that.
Yes.
But there's a definite contradiction there.
Apparent contradiction.
Okay.
I think we can reconcile it. And Krishna does indicate to Uddhava and to others that the injunctions of the Vedas are manifestations of his desire. You know, in general, what the Vedas ask us to do is what Krishna wants. But the problem is, the Vedas say different things at different times to different people. It's, you know, the application of the of what instruction should be applied to whom at what time has to be carefully judged. It's in that sense, I think, that Krishna is telling Arjuna to give up all other dharmas. Because Arjuna was talking about some specific dharmas, like non-violence. You know, don't, you know, avoid the fight dharma. So Krishna is really telling him to reject that dharma, not yeah, irrelevant. The dharmas that just aren't appropriate to the situation.
Not
the
other dharma.
Yeah, but, you know, to respect your elders is up there on the list. It may not be the highest dharma, but it's a high dharma. You know, it's a basic principle. It's very rare that anybody should disrespect his elders. You could sometimes have to go against what your elders say because it's a dharma, but still you don't disrespect them. Even if your guru becomes a, you know, speaks nonsense, you should respectfully question. You should never disrespect your guru even if he speaks nonsense. You know, the injunction is you should tactfully, respectfully question what he says. So to go to the extent of killing your guru, that's rarely sanctioned. You know, normally, yes, you know, you shouldn't kill your guru. You know, it doesn't even say that. I don't mean there's a commandment. Don't kill your guru. But it's so obvious. You know, who would even think of killing his guru? So it's practically an absolute dharma for everybody in every situation. Don't kill your guru. So when Krishna says, reject that, that's very special. He's not saying that everybody should go and kill their guru, the way Arjuna did. It's just, you know, Arjuna, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna for our instruction. Therefore, we should go kill our gurus too. It's obviously not. So we have to see what Krishna means when he says, give up all your dharmas. You know, he wants us to still maintain the dharma of respecting our teachers, of respecting our elders, and so on. But he wants Arjuna to do what he wants in the particular situation. But that's the highest, the point is, that Krishna's making, is the highest dharma is what I want. And what I want varies from devotee to devotee and from time to time. You got to be in touch with me and find out what I want for you. You can't just read it out of the book. For the appropriate application, you have to be in touch with me in devotional service. Yes, through, yeah, and usually through association with Krishna's devotees, Mahajanas. Most of us don't get the facility of having Krishna directly by our side to give us the instructions. We have to depend on hearing from devotees in the parampara. We have a connection through the parampara with Krishna. Yes. Okay, thank you. Something else? Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.